I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello, and welcome to No Small Questions, the show where we answer your burning questions about us, D&D, and of course, all things No Small Roles.
Woo.
I am Dara Bailey. I play Enkidu in our main campaign, as well as Judge in the Fabulosa Adventures, starring Jeremy Cobb and Jasper William Cartwright from Three Black Halflings. And also, I play Simeon Redishar in the Woden Isles spinoff, and also the Game Master for the Candlekeep spin-off. Tonight, I will be questioning our returning artificer.
It's me, Ben, and Ben Galpin. And I'm going to be fireballing some questions back to you as well, Daryl. So I play Orin Quill in our main campaign, and I've also played Richard, the shape-shifting entity in our recent spin-off.
Oh my gosh, our recent spin-off. How can I forget Clarence? Anyway,
of course, you played Clarence as well.
I played Clarence, of course I did. I didn't forget that at all.
No, how could we forget that? Grace's wonderful A Familiar Problem
one-shot. It was so much fun.
Oh, it was so joyful. Yes, do check that out, listeners, if you haven't already, for a couple of hours of non-stop silliness, fun and adventure. I also play Dax Thundermeyer Stani in Daryl's spin-off, and I've played Thorn and Ricky in some of our other little side quests.
Ricky!
And this Christmas I am playing Fingal the Snowman in our Christmas one-shot.
Which I'm looking forward to listening to. I might save that for the plane.
Yes, save it for the plane. I've just, to let our listeners in on the moment where this is being recorded, I've just had the music through from David, but I've not listened to the music yet. So my job when we finish recording No Small Questions tonight is I'm going to be putting together the final mix of our Christmas one-shot.
Yes.
Because time is a weird ball of strings in this universe of David's, though, I think the one-shot might already be out, so I hope you enjoyed it. And if it isn't out yet, I hope you enjoy it when it does come out. But I think the one-shot's out already. So, yeah, I hope you enjoy it, have enjoyed it on the plane, Daryl, depending on where we are in the timeline.
Sure. I will say to future me and the rest of the listeners, I had a great time listening to the Christmas one-shot. Is that what it's called? One-shot?
I think the name is still up for grabs, but the working title is the Chris Mass One-Shot because it's DM'd by Chris.
Anyway. Magic of editing.
Right, okay. This is, importantly, your spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert!
Because we are going to be talking about episodes up to and including episode 81, Five Heads Are Better. So if you're not up to date, you have been warned. And, you know, they're all on your playlist. So go and play the rest if you haven't caught up.
Get out of here and come back.
Get out. Get out of here.
Come on, just get out of here.
Get out my tavern.
Anyway. So for those of you who have not listened to a No Small Questions before, we will be asking questions sent in by you, and we've got a few we've got for each other.
Ooh, and it's funny you should say that, Daryl, because I have a question I'd like to start with for you.
All right.
So, we know that the Epic of Gilgamesh has been a big influence on the creation of Enkidu. But I want to know if there were other myths or stories that you were drawn to when you were creating our favourite warlock.
Oh, interesting. I think in terms of real world myths, that's the only one. That's the only one I drew on. I didn't want to confuse the identity of him too much. Stories, big. Obviously, I kind of, for my own origins, Final Fantasy is a massive, like, kind of like influence on my imagination. Discovering that game franchise when I was young, and the way they told stories and took bits of myth from all sorts of cultures and mashed them together to make their own, I find that really inspiring. So I looked at different Final Fantasy games. Of course, Gilgamesh and Enkidu are recurring characters in the Final Fantasy games. Each
are
game
they?
Separate. Yes, they are. So just a quick whistle down. Each numbered Final Fantasy title, like Final Fantasy 7 or 13 or 12, they're all set in different worlds. But Gilgamesh and Enkidu, or mostly just Gilgamesh, shows up in multiple ones. And ever since Final Fantasy V, has been this wanderer who kind of is kind of like a joke character that reoccurs as a boss, and he kind of falls into this interdimensional rift and shows up in other games. So fans like to have little theories about, is it the same one? But when looking at the myth of the Epic of Gilgamesh and seeing that it's like potentially the oldest story of all time, I found that, and the relationship between Gilgamesh and Enkidu was just fascinating, so I kind of just doubled down from there, really.
Oh, so is that where you first came across the story of Gilgamesh and Enkidu?
From the games,
Final
Fantasy? Yeah, from Final Fantasy. But then, of course, I think it was in university when I was like had a great old time, like delving into like different histories and stuff, and like discovered Middle Eastern, you know, lost Middle Eastern societies and cultures where the Epic of Gilgamesh is from. Yeah, kind of just blew my mind. And the fact that we, some bits of the story has only just been recovered recently, as it's written on the, well, chiseled and carved into a stone tablet rather than printed onto paper.
Wow.
That's how old the story is.
Oof.
So, yeah, I found a story, as long as we've been able to tell stories in whatever form, we found a way to record them, whether it's orally or even chiseling them into stone. And now we, not like another way of telling it is doing it like freehand, and we improvise it. It's quite organic and natural and compelling. And yeah, I just found that.
Well,
that
rolling
dedication.
Some dice.
Yeah, rolling some dice, which are, again, another device we've had since antiquity. Dice from even ancient Egypt, they rolled dice, and polyhedral dice as well, not just six-sided ones. So no matter, I love the, I'm inspired by the dedication to preserving a story and adding to it as time goes on. It's a long-running story split up into different chapters found across time. It's amazing.
That's very cool.
Mm. I have a question for you, but I think I might save it for later.
Okay. Exciting.
It's a campaign related story.
Oh, okay.
Question. So I thought I might save it as the questions get more relative to that. So I want to build up to a nice segue.
I feel like, you know, that's a little tantalizing like tidbit to keep everyone listening.
Keep listening for the answer to this question.
You won't believe the question that Daryl asks Ben.
No. You won't. Pippa has a question for the both of us.
Mm-hmm.
Bugs. Mm. Is there anything that would really, 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 they were really three times, gross you out in game? What might you include in a game? I assume if we were running a game,
in
attempt to gross out the rest of the NSR cast, or maybe not necessarily as running the game. What might you include?
That is a good question. I mean, yeah, listening back, because obviously I wasn't there for the whole bug thing. So my first experience of
good
it was listening back after the event, and like, it's quite full on, including Vicky's description of her surgery at one point.
Oh my gosh! Yeah,
just to bring it into real life as well. What would really gross me out? I mean, I feel like David also did a lovely job in the, I mean, if lovely job is the right term, in the Deacon spin-off adventure. Ooh, as yeah. well, of some fairly gross events and descriptions. I hate Daddy Long Legs. Is there
really?
Is there something that they would involve them?
Oh my gosh!
I hate them.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh!
I just something about the way they move and they fly and they just sort of haplessly bounce around like they're not in control of where they're going or just sort of landing on you and in your hair and blah.
Hair? Okay. And would you? Like, this is like a Vicky Gaskin thing to do because Vicky, as we know, has a phobia of needles, does not like needles, but then of course goes on to play a character that objectively uses needles with extreme prejudice. Would you then find a way to incorporate Daddy Longlegs into a game?
Oh, I could be a swarm keeper ranger with a swarm like Daddy Longlegs.
Oh, that's amazing. It's like Shino from Naruto. There's a character in the very famous anime. His clan, his family, can have the ability to control insects, and they host the insects in their bodies.
Oh, no. No.
It's amazing.
It just makes me think of The Witcher 3 when one of the three crones has flies living in her,
eyes. She has the, her skin is like... No. That one creeps me out. I hate that one.
I apologize to Superfan Alice if you're listening to this because I don't think you're a big fan of insect related grossness. So sorry.
For me to Alice, it's not just the bugs about her that creep me out. It's how she first appears is horrendous.
I'm trying to think what else would gross me out. What would gross you out, Daryl?
For me, it is. Oh my gosh! I work with a lot of children. And children are the greatest carriers of casual disease and infection, and they love putting things in their mouths and touching you and touching things. I think, but in particular, what grosses me out, I can handle a kid falling into mud and brushing against you as they walk down a corridor, maybe. But anything that comes out of someone's mouth and then is spread visually is, I find it unbearable. Unbearable. It's someone like spits or, you know, I just hate sticky, I don't know, like phlegmy stuff. Just if I'm sat next to someone in transport or walking by and I hear them hucking from their nose or like a big like nasal sniff, and I'm just like, oh please, please blow your nose or get that away from me. It really grosses me out. It's not even so much a visual thing. It's the sound of it as well.
Yeah.
And the proximity of it to me, No.
I suspect you're quite glad at the moment that I'm in a completely different room with you down a Zoom because I'm still suffering the effects of a lingering cold.
No.
And I feel like bodily I'm creating exactly some of that stuff.
No.
In my lungs right now.
Oh, thank you. And as we record this, I'm less than 2 days away from flying 9 hours to America to perform. Mm. I cannot get sick. I get so precious about it. I was reading to my class the other day, literally yesterday before I recorded this, and they were coughing without covering their mouth. Bless them, they're 6 and 7. But I'm like, guys, I cannot read this story until you cover your mouth. Because I can feel their cough brushing against the arms of my hair, the hair on my arms. And I'm like, no, no, I rebuke you. So I think, in terms of like, what would I include in a game?
How would you work that into a game?
How would I work that into a game? I would include a plague element. Ooh. If I was running a game, there will be a device somehow where a plague or an infection comes, and I describe it in very intimate detail of what it does, and then drop the hint that the players are infected. And then just, you know, just role play the effects, the coughs, the sniffing, all that stuff. That'll be pretty gross.
I was gonna say you could have like a phlegm dragon or something.
Oh,
that,
yeah,
like its breath weapon is like a sneeze.
Yeah, it's a morning breath breath weapon.
Morning
and
breath.
It's a D4 to recharge, not a D6. It's a D4.
D4 to recharge in the morning and a D8 in the evening.
There we go. Nice one.
And you can use toothpaste on it, or
oh yeah, you can. You can use toothpaste.
It's vulnerable to toothpaste.
Yeah. Amazing.
Awesome. So, superfan Sam has a question for you, Daryl.
Oh.
He says, absolutely love Enkidu's action surge round in that last episode. That's 81, I assume. And thrilled that one of the party is tapping into the rich juiciness of multi-classing. Ooh. Have you multi-classed with any of your other D&D characters? And, says Sam, it has four A's in it. Have you considered adding a third class to Enkidu? Sorcerers, paladins, and bards blend very nicely here, says Sam.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, thanks, Sam, because min-maxing is actually quite fun now that I think about it. Possibilities of being absolutely broken and indestructible. Yeah, thanks. The multi-classing has been a boon, an absolute boon for Enkidu. Little fun fact that will make you guys chuckle is that I did not know warlocks had only two spell slots until we had already started recording. I did not know. I just thought, I've only got two at level one. I'll get more when I'm level.
I'll be 16,
reading it properly. And I think I was reading the sorcerer's the sorcerer table by accident. I was like, what? I only have two spell slots until level like 12, I think. And then you get a third. And it's like, what? And you already got to level 5 spells. This is awful. What am I supposed to do? I have a big problem with action economy in tabletop games. And I look at something like Monk, which is just nothing but hit, bonus action hit, key point hit. And I'm like, cool. Yeah. Like, I like that. And that makes the game fun and engaging because you have options. I like utility in my games. That's why I played a paladin with Judge, because I can hit, I can heal, I can shield. Mm. I like having variety in what I can do in a turn. I haven't seriously considered adding a third class because that requires leveling up, and I'm not sure how long the campaign's going to go on for. But if
level 20,
we're fighting gods by then. Because you have to. You're so powerful at level 20. But if I was to add a third class, it probably would be a sorcerer. It would. Because I've got a nice spell set up, which I'm going to keep in reserve for future episodes. But once I cast two of them, I'm done. There was a fight we've recorded in the future ahead of the release where Kidu blew out his spell slots in one turn. He was just like, cool, I guess I'll just Eldritch Blast now.
At least you've got that reliable favourite to fall back on, like, as a warlock.
It is a bit of a glass cannon, but someone, like, I don't know, for example, say the spell misses, or God forbid it's, like, counterspelled. You're kind of done.
Yeah.
You're kind of done. I know the new Ornoth Arcana, which might go into 1D&D, has fixed that, and warlocks have finally more spell slots. But I think I'll add Sorcerer just so he can have a bit of versatility, because Hexblade Warlock has some spicy invocations, but they all cost spell slots to use. And I've only got two.
Yeah, because there's I think that's the thing, isn't it? Like, because I've played a warlock a little while ago, and there's like useful little things instead of spells, aren't there? So you've got your Eldritch Invocations, is that right?
Yeah,
which can kind of, you get a few of them, don't you? You get more of them as you level up.
You do, yeah. I think I got one at level 9, Because he's, yeah, you get a warlock level 9, you get another, you get to add one.
Get to add one more. Them.
Yeah.
And then at some point you start getting the, you start getting like additional higher level spells, don't you, that aren't quite part
Mystic
of the warlock
Arcanum.
Spells. That's
it. I think, again, it's another like one use per like rest or whatnot, which allows you to cast a level 6 spell, which you normally don't get access to. Ooh. So it's kind of like having a special spell slot to cast that sixth level spell. I can't pull out any books or anything right now, which I like to do while I'm playing. But I think you still have to pick it from the warlock timetable. I'm still in school. And the warlock spell table.
You've got art or DT to choose from. And
yeah, exactly. You got art or DT or home economics or cooking. What do you do? Drama. I think you just pick an extra spell and then it has its own spell slot. Do you know? So I just feel
So I haven't really read about the warlock in 1D&D much in the stuff that's going to be coming out in 2024. But
yeah.
So are they adding more spell slots sort of generally for warlocks then?
Yeah, and you get to like warlocks don't really get the warlock identity until level 3. Level 1, you're kind of just like nothing really. You don't really get your pact boon until level 2. You get your patron. I think you get your patron at level 2, and then your pact boon at 3. So it's kind of like you get your subclass at 2, and then you get your further subclass variant at 3. And I think they've changed that, so you get that at level 1 instead.
Yeah.
So you just play the class and have its identity then.
Yeah, because for Enkidu, the sort of the identity and your sort of your patron has been so tied up with Enkidu's identity from the start that it's sort of it's vital to the kind of the essence of the character, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
Like,
it really is. Can't imagine waiting a couple of levels until access abilities that will carry him through the whole campaign. It's very strange to wait that long.
Fab.
Oh, Ross Meikle, Rhymes with Treacle.
Yeah.
Has a question for us both. We know why Gwen, Juna, and Gaius ended up in Tillisham. Has it been revealed why Enkidu and Orin were walking through the Lockholt Wood before they were lured into the cave? Why did they stick with the others and not carry on with their initial journey?
Oh, yeah. This is big.
This is a big question.
Yeah. I mean, this I feel like for me is all tied in. I feel like I'm going to have to open up Orin's backstory notes. I feel on this one. I don't know if you want to answer first while I load document.
Yeah, I can do because it's going to be very short. there's no, you know, when people say there's a long and a short answer, there's only a short answer. And that is, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why Enkidu is near the Lockholt Wood.
Amazing.
Because the way I wrote my, I think we had a good laugh about it, or like people laughed at me about it for my confusion of the timelines, because I was role-playing in Kudu with the thought that he just left the Iron Chain, survived, wandered through the western folds of Drevain and ended up in the Lockholt Woods, and like, oh, I was on a mission for the king and I got blown up and my friends are inside me, and then Dave's like, no, the king's been dead for ages, like years ago, and you're like, wait what? The timeline was either confused or Enkidu just lost 6 years of his life and just didn't know about it. So that plot line is hanging over my head. I have not the slightest clue what happened, and David just turned it into a, you know, mustachioed villain on a swivelly chair going, I'm going to put something here, but I haven't decided yet.
I love it. So did Enkidu have, was that like his first memory after 5 years was waking up in the cave, or did he have like...
Yeah, it really is. It is, actually. I have no idea what happened between that time.
Wow. Okay, so that's entirely in David's hands, what had happened immediately before.
A git.
My goodness. So then why... I guess, why did Enkidu decide to stick with the rest of the gang?
Yes, that is the good follow-up question. I think it got to a point where he was thinking, do I go back to Mervai and get answers? I think the state of Tillisham after kind of like put him in a situation where things are pretty hot right now. Maybe I should lie low, and I'm implicated in whatever's happened. And this person is like, Heron.
Yeah.
Heron is part of the establishment. He knows what we've been up to. Maybe I should just play it safe for now. Go along with this guy, and once things have calmed down, smoothed over, maybe find a way to get back to Mervai and get some answers. But also, I think the fact that the person who, at the time, he believed was responsible for how he ended up was inside him, he was kind of like lost on, do I even need to go back? The person who I want to blame is inside my body. So maybe I'll get some answers if I stick with this guy, being a magical kind of person. I think he was just kind of like, just, there was a conversation with, I think, Oren. I can't remember when it was. I think
there was one. Like,
yeah, there was one when he said, I'm just lost. I don't know what I'm doing. Where he just kind of opened up. I don't know what I'm doing.
I feel like Enkidu and Oren had a couple of conversations in the tavern right near the start, didn't they? I think, because I think both of them were a bit hanging on the edge about why they were even sticking around with this group.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. Oren wanted to leave.
Yeah.
He did. Yeah. Gwen was like, we've got to be heroes.
Like, yeah.
No, we don't.
Oren was very much up for leaving.
These people are dangerous. Yeah.
My original kind of thoughts were. Oren had only recently left the Woden Isles.
Ah, yeah.
Before the events of No Small Roles kicked off. So he'd travelled over the sea, the Shivered Shore, and was essentially working his way up north. I think the original kind of inclination for him was that he was trying to get to Fain Harthar, actually, which is the capital city of Aeland.
The capital of Aeland.
Mainly because I think when I've been chatting backstory stuff with David, he had sort of said that in Aeland, or in Fain Harthar in particular, and I guess we saw this a little bit with Dwayne recently when Oren dropped in on Dwayne, that there's a lot of support there for people with like creative ideas, funding for research, sort of universities, that sort of thing. I think he'd heard that it was a very academic area, and he was quite keen to head in that direction, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But also in a sort of general northern walk, I think it was very much intentions that he was then going to carry on north to Solmarath and Mirath.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to find out more about himself. Mm. And ultimately that's where he comes from originally, where he was born, at least as far as he thinks and knows.
Mm-hmm.
So he was essentially trying to head north and then bumped into this lot along the way. And why did he stick with him? I mean, he was quite close to not sticking with him, I feel like, at times. Like, you know, Oren, certainly in originally, was so kind of, I think, adamant in the idea that all of the stuff that they would get involved with was, like, not their business, not something that they needed to get involved with.
It was
only really through the sort of persuasion of the other members of the group, like Enkidu in particular, to start with, that Oren stuck around. I mean, obviously now he's deeply embedded, like, with this group, the sort of the found family and literal family for his in his case as well, with Guy. That now he's obviously got a lot of reasons to stick around, but originally I think it was a bit touch and go.
Yeah.
Or whether he was just gonna clear off and carry on north.
Fair.
And I feel like there's a lot that he still hasn't got answers to. Like he still wants to go to Mirath and Solmarath and Aeland, and and he wants to go to the Mercy Lands. So
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
this is a an interesting diversion on a path.
Yeah, got you. Looking ahead, my question is going to be quite relevant soon. Ben?
Yes?
Pippa wants to ask, was it difficult to avoid potential spoilers whilst you were away with Dragons and Mythical Beasts, but still part of the editing messages and group chats? Did you enjoy the anticipation of coming back to record Oren's adventures with Petra? And did you find yourself overthinking what might happen next?
Was it difficult to avoid spoilers? It wasn't too bad to avoid spoilers, actually, I think, because all the files were flying around everywhere, but I did not download or listen to any of them. So I didn't listen to any of the I didn't listen to any of the raw episodes as they were happening. So obviously I was seeing a bit of No Small Roles conversation going on our various groups. But I'm trying to think if I had picked up on any story threads at all while I was away or where you were. I think most of it was quite a big surprise, really, when I got back. And I'd had a chat with David before we recorded the one shot. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, should I know anything before I go in this? Or should I like know anything before I record back with all you guys again and like doing the first group recording? Mm. We were like, no, let's come in completely cold. Like, so it was, what was really fun in the solo episode was the little crossover moments that happened with stuff that was going on with the four of you that I didn't have any context for. But Juna trying to come in and do sendings at some point.
Yes.
And Juna scrying at one point.
Oh my gosh.
And these are just such lovely little, like, what? Like, trying, and I was trying to get my head round while I was recording, like, why is Juna scrying, like, at this point? And I couldn't understand it. Like, I just didn't get the context of it at all. And then when, of course, Dwayne turns up, and then Dwayne's doing scrying, and Dwayne's doing legend lore and everything as well.
Oh my gosh.
And I still didn't have the context. I obviously had a bit of an idea that I knew you were all trying to... I knew what direction you were trying to head from where we'd been separated at that point, because, you know, I thought I was going with you, or Oren, rather, Ben knew he wasn't, but Oren thought he was going with you all, like, on the trip to the Henge, and then following up, because I think it was planned out at that point, that the sort of the direction already that we wanted to head, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So Oren had a bit of an idea, but how you'd all got on and what had happened in the meantime, I had very little idea, basically none. So I'd managed to avoid it quite well, really.
Well done.
And then did I find myself overthinking what might happen next? I was certainly, I think when it sort of got near to recording it, I was feeling quite like I'd been out of it for 3 months for a start. I'd been out of the group stuff. I hadn't played Oren for 3 months. Mm. And I definitely felt quite like, oh, hang on, D&D? And actually, we'd been playing some D&D while I'd been in the States touring, but obviously a completely different game. We'd been doing a little bit of the starter set adventure, the Lost Mines of Phandelver.
Wicked.
Yeah, which is the first time I'd ever played that through. So we'd been playing on the tour bus. Gary in our cast had been, shout out to Gary if he's listening, because he does listen to Knows More Rolls.
Hey.
So Gary had been DMing us. I'd been playing a little goblin called Weird, who kind of spoke like this.
Oh my gosh.
I loved him. So I'd been in with the D&D, but I'd been in a different group and I'd been in a different thing, and I didn't know what you guys had all been up to. And I just had no idea what David had in mind for Oren's adventure, and then what it turned out to be, like jumping time and places, and how much he packed into it was, yeah, a complete surprise.
Wow.
So, yes, I think I was a little concerned coming back, but awesome. Yeah, it was a joy.
Awesome, man. Awesome. We've got a follow-up question from Superfan San.
Who's Sam?
And also me. similar questions. So Sam says that solo episode of Orin's was a blast, and David did an amazing job of throwing you right in the deep end.
Yeah.
If given the chance or a time hopping phylactery table, is there anything you would have played differently in hindsight? I have a follow up question, but just as wordy. But I think I'll ask it. But like, kind of tied into Sam's question.
Yeah.
Mine is that considering that Orin is typically the most hesitant to engage in the Trevanian political shenanigans going on, if there was anything you considered holding back from sharing with the party?
Oh, that is a really good follow-up question. Okay, I'll come on to that in a sec.
Sure.
So, to start with Sam's, is there anything I would have played differently? I definitely feel like the one-on-one time that Orin had with Beryon,
yeah.
I feel like I have regrets about just suddenly me as a player and also Orin just suddenly being dropped into this situation, finding himself face to face with Beryon, obviously a character we have encountered through his actions rather than in person previously in the game, his deeply unpleasant actions. I don't know, and I don't know what I would have done differently. I'm still like, oh, I don't know what I could have done in that situation, but I feel like there's probably things I could have said or things I could have asked or influence I could have tried to have, but Orin was out of his body or back in his body for such a short period of time for that conversation. Obviously, my unbodied friend was there asking for specific requests from him. So it was tricky for it to be the time and place to kind of go on the attack with Beryon.
Yeah.
But I feel like if I was clever, there's something I could have done there, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, right.
Like, other than like, fireball. And that's one problem solved.
Nice.
And we've got rid of Beryon. Or like, if I had some sort of mind influencing ability that I could like influence his mind and be like, don't want to go after the throne. Maybe I could have dropped some frosting in like his food or something. Made him really suggestible. I feel like he's gonna have all sorts of anti-frosting stuff. If anyone does, it's Beryon.
Yeah, probably. And it will probably wear off in a couple of hours.
Right? Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. It wouldn't have quite the effect that I want.
Exactly.
So that's definitely a bit of a regret or a sort of feeling that something else could have happened there. Looking back in my notes, to remind myself everything that happened in that episode, because so much happened. I think the other thing was, again, in the throne room. So when I was in Mervai, again, definitely feels like opportunities maybe to have done something. Orin was in the throne room. It was in the palace. I don't know what I could have done there either. But again.
Exactly.
I think maybe the regret I have is not asking Sigrid about Gwen. And I was really on the fence about bringing up Gwen. And the reason I didn't is because Gwen had up until that point been so sort of secretive about names and all of that, especially with her
as opposed to our own name.
As opposed to, throwing out all the different names constantly, name dropping herself. But in the sort of line of the recent discoveries that have been sort of going on and the recent name twists and everything and the sort of Orcosian identity that Gwen was sort of finding out more about shortly before I left the group, which she subsequently then found out lots more about while I was away. But Orin was just very reluctant to bring up any of her names in front of this Orcosian high up sort of ambassadorial member. And what potential consequences that would have had. Obviously, if he'd known it was Gwen's mum, I feel like he would have said something.
Yeah.
And maybe I could have skirted around the issue. Maybe I could have tried to get some more information out of her and tried to figure it out. But I think I was thrown by the red herring of Juna getting in touch with her and making me feel like there was some connection with Juna. And that led me down a garden path that I just did not put two and two together on.
Well, she was also playing quite coy as well.
Yes.
You know, obviously she's a woman in a position is like playing lots of cards put close to her chest.
Yeah.
Not sure who she could trust, especially someone who jumps out, appears out of nowhere. I understand that.
And obviously the only other thing that I'd change is I would, drag Jeremy Corbyn to be part of the main campaign, like when I got teleported back. Like.
Oh, my. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
That's the other one. Remind me what your follow-up question was.
Yeah, was there anything you considered holding back from turning the party?
Good question. It's not something I've deliberately held back, but Grace asked me about it the other day. I think after she had listened to the episode and she was like, you didn't mention that my mum was part of the Fenrenders who were coming into Drevain and trying to get to find out more about the Henges and everything. I don't think that was a hugely deliberate omission on my part. I think, I remember when I came back that Orin says something about like looking at Kido at one point and wanting to have a discussion later on.
Opportunity was not on your side.
Because I think he wanted to bring up the fact that Petra had said about the feeling of being sort of pulled into sort of Enkidu's orbit, the sort of feeling that she had and sort of reluctance to get too near him.
She knows some stuff.
She knows some stuff, yes. Yeah. So I think that was certainly something that Orin had some reluctance about. Bringing up in front of everyone, I think.
Hmm. Okay.
And beyond that, I feel like, he got himself in a bit of a muddle, / I got myself in a bit of a muddle about what was going on in the throne room. I guess he's not going to be entirely, maybe as an open book about Dwayne's conversations with Petra, such as the ones Orin heard before he was whisked away, at least, or Dontavian, as I maybe should call him instead.
Yes,
but yeah, I think that was about it. Like, I think most of it, like, Orin has been pretty open about, I think, and wasn't trying to hold back. Character development,
yeah. Character development.
Right, so I have a question from Superfan Alice for you, Daryl.
Sweet.
A follow-up, in fact, for the previous stuff. So if Enkidu got a whistle-stop solo adventure, who would you want to bump into and where would you want to end up? So if you could jump through space like I got to on mine, like if you had a teleporting companion with you.
Mm-hmm. So if I got to speedrun, that's my run.
Yeah, your turn to speedrun Drevain.
Yeah.
And beyond.
I think he'd like to return to Dram.
Because
a lot of Enkidu's like formative years were in Mervai, but his origin began in Dram. Person he'd like to see there is Scarpus. Scarpus is the old lady who looked after orphans who are kind of forgotten and left behind. She would like sew up clothes for them and tell them stories. He'd check in on her, make sure she was okay, probably listen to her story. He'd probably want to know what the situation was with the Hex, if they're about still. I think that's all I'd say on Dram. Just go back to where you started, see what's changed. Faultless Vale.
Yep.
Return to Faultless Vale. Kill Malleus. got a score to settle there. Oh yeah. Yeah, we left a lot of stuff behind in Fallen Surveillance, to be honest, to be fair. But Malleus in particular, it'll be a chance meeting as well. That'd be really exciting. The Woden Isles, for one. I love the idea of him suddenly showing up in the middle of a heist with the Icebreakers, having no context really of who they are or what they're after, and suddenly having to kind of like be in this crazy heist with them. That'd be fun.
With all our characters from the spin-off, from the
yeah,
the
exactly.
Fans,
that'd
yeah.
be absolutely hilarious. Yeah,
yeah. yeah.
yeah. Like,
oh, maybe that could be arranged.
Am I here? Why am I here? Okay, this is, I've done the heist before. Sure.
Yeah, that's
okay,
true.
Cool.
Yeah, and Kido's a great person to join the crew there.
Yeah, he'd fit right in actually. Yeah. it'd be really funny. But also, lastly on my little list, I've Prydon.
Mm.
He'd be in Prydon, and I'm imagining he's. It's a nice sunny day, and he's chilling with Celamund, Gwen's father. He wouldn't tell Celamund who he was. He'd just keep any knowledge of Gwen in his back pocket, and he'd just chill, just chat to him, and just wonder, you know, just meet the man and wonder what his life would have been like and his journey had he had a father like him. Celamund obviously loves Gwen very much, but obviously there's a lot we do in our role play that puts Gwen and Enkidu on two very opposing sides of life and upbringing, and I guess he'd like to know what it was like, put himself in her shoes from the other side, just for a moment, and see what that was.
I love that.
Allow himself to indulge that. Kind of like idea.
Yeah, okay, I love that. Yeah, that's really lovely. Yeah. Hang out in Prydon.
Yeah, it'd be nice. Oh. Yeah, moving on. Mike C wants to ask you, Ben.
Yeah.
Given the period you shared control over your own body, are you concerned you might have been Enkidu'd?
A new verb.
And are in a consortium body? Would Oren be bothered about being in said body?
First of all, yeah, I feel like shared is strong. I feel like Petra was very much in control. Oren was booted down to the boot of the car. For quite a lot of that. I don't think Oren's concerned that he has been Enkidu'd. I feel like Petra and Enkidu feel like such sort of different styles of people being in control of other bodies, it feels to me. Mm-hmm. It feels like a very different thing. And I do kind of trust Petra, I think. The sort of the net result of the adventure with her is that she's obviously got her goals.
Mm-hmm.
She's trying to right wrongs, get her body back, her actual body, and, you know, go against the Archmages. Archmages is the word I'm looking for, isn't it?
Archmagi?
What's her name?
Plural?
What's her name?
Adathor Chargel.
Chargel. So I feel like she's got her motivation. She's trying to get her body back and work against Chargel. But I think she's sort of been, I know she wasn't honest originally, but I think she has sort of been honest with Oren. And if stuff had happened, big changes had happened, either Oren's got completely the wrong read on her and she's been doing stuff when he's not aware of it, or I think she's been sort of upfront after the event, maybe, but she has then been upfront. Also, Oren's had the advantage of having Aggie around outside, waddling around. And it sounds from what Aggie's reported back that what Petra has told Oren is honest, I think. So I don't think Oren's concerned that anything sort of shady has happened. No body swapping has happened. Like, she's obviously being in control. She's obviously eating a lot of food while she's been in control. And and everything else. Gone to the loo, much to Orin's alarm.
Of course.
But yeah, how would he feel about being in a consorting body? I mean, like, if he was in a sovereign model body, it would be an interesting experiment. Like, I mean, Orin has, I think, expressed a desire in the past to be like, I wonder how Enkidu works now. Like, I think there'd be a kind of macabre fascination with it from Orin's point of view if he was in something that she considered a more mechanical body than he currently has. obviously, concern would be if anything, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think he loved not being in control. So, you know, he certainly doesn't want to be unbodied or, you know, have something like what's happened to Petra happen to him. But, if it's a purely mechanical thing, hey, maybe that's okay. So, Pippa wants to ask you, Daryl, as you've now played, this is a bit of a follow-up, actually, as you've played in more or less as many episodes with Enkidu in his sovereign model body than his original one, how much does this guide how you play Enkidu and his urgency to resolve his own issues with his patrons versus Erida's ongoing influence?
Very good question, mate. I think I'll answer the back half of that question first. In my opinion, the most effective use of the most effective employment of manipulation is to allow the person, allow the target to believe the choices they make are their own. It's never felt a case that Erida's pressed up, down, left, right, start, select to push Enkidu in a certain direction. The direction that Enkidu wants to go is the same place that Erida wants to go. So, of course, to have the most control or influence over the situation is to let things unfold. That's the whole point of having such a big master plan, right? And any plan that requires on more than like two circumstances to go right, it's a bad plan. Hence, you know, about to say massive spoiler there. I won't. yeah, I won't. I won't. I was just thinking. Yeah, that
we'll
makes
come
sense.
Back to one in 10 episodes, shall we?
Yes. Context is needed. We'll come back to that question in about maybe 10 episodes. But like in terms of the first half of the question, I think Enkidu is much more, I don't say reckless, but he's much more daring in terms of like throwing his body out there to protect others or to get stuck in with the fight. At the beginning of the campaign, I was playing Enkidu with the thought that Enkidu has to survive to get his friends out because it's not just his life on the line, it's the life of the other people inside him. Of course, as the stakes increase for the rest of Dravain and also as it gets closer to the Abracalads,
I didn't even flinch when you said
his body. No, I did not. It's a great performance, can you tell? As he's gotten closer with the party, and he's got a durable body. The least he can do is, you know, use that to his advantage. He's had time to grieve for the body that once was or whatever was capable then versus now. Now is now, and the problems he faces are present, so use what he has, right? As for Erida's influence, I think if there was something drastic she was going to do to him, it won't be yet, it'll be in the future. So I think Enkidu has to just tackle these issues one thing at a time until that time comes.
I've got two quick follow-up questions, if I may.
Yeah, go on.
Firstly, does Enkidu feel like, you're saying putting sort of the body on your line, does Enkidu feel like if he died in this current body, would Erida be able to or would want to just like make a new Enkidu and just be like, poof, there you go? Is that what he sort of thinks? Or
She's said as much. She explicitly said, we've got you backed up.
Wow.
She did say that. But Enkidu's not relying on that for a second.
Yeah. And the other follow-up question was, because mechanically, Pippa was asking about that you've been playing now more as a sovereign model body. Like, mechanically, am I right in thinking Enkidu switched from being human to Warforged as a, yes, like, mechanic on...
Yeah.
Warforged. Yeah, for gameplay.
Yeah. It's Warforged now.
Did that have a big influence? It's obviously affected, like, not needing to rest in the same way and not needing to eat or breathe.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
did it
yeah.
affect sort of stats and stuff as well, that change?
It did, yeah. It's constitution shot. Really? Points. It's still not quite right when I level up. So I have to look at those. Because my hit point's a bit low. his constitution goes up. Has blacksmithing tools and proficiency now. Doesn't need to eat, breathe, or sleep. Cannot be surprised during a long rest. So yes, he kind of like quote unquote shuts down, like just power saving. But he's always alert, really.
Accepting updates from Erida for 6 hours a night.
He's like, sorry, I just wanted to put this like 1 gigabyte patch in while I'm asleep. However, the body functions like a flesh and blood one. Like, if Enkidu wants to eat, he can. If he wants to sleep, he can. And he can still dream. So he still functions like a flesh and blood being, albeit with an incredibly complex mechanical body that doesn't have a red copper wire in sight. So...
As far as we know. Ari might need to dig in further and find out.
I'll check next time he goes to the toilet.
Amazing.
Superfan Sam has a question for us both. Despite learning that Heron is a part of the Children of Havoc, the party are still pursuing the missions and persons he set for you back at the start of the broader campaign. Does it worry you that the party might be playing right into their hands? I'm going to pause my mic as I'm going to lose my mind here.
Daryl is gesticulating wildly, punching the table.
All right, I'm done. Cannot stand the Children of Havoc. I cannot stand them. I hate them so much. I hate them. And I won't say anything else.
So you're not best pleased that we're still following his...
I'm just his wondering, why are we still doing this? Goodness sake. Screw these guys. Just put them in a bin.
I think, Orin is definitely worried that they might be playing into their hands. But at the moment, I feel like the roads he has led us down are useful for us to pursue ourselves at the moment anyway. So yes, currently our goals align with his, and he gave us a jump start on that road. But that's not to say that Orin will be running back anytime soon being like, hey, give us some more missions. Does it worry me that we might be playing into his hands? Yes. Yes, it does. It does worry me. And like you, I might leave that there.
Oh, gosh.
Right.
Go on.
We've got a final question from Captain Jam.
Sweet.
Who wants to ask us both what I consider to be maybe the most important question.
Sure.
What's the craziest thing you'd do for a spoon?
Is that us personally or characters?
We could do either.
Oh my gosh. What's the craziest thing I'd do for a spoon?
I mean, because Orin would do pretty much anything, I feel like, for a spoon.
Enkidu is a bit more reluctant.
Yeah.
At the spoons. I think something very silly and un-Enkidu would be the craziest thing you'd do for a spoon if it meant that, Enkidu, we really need this spoon because getting the spoons means that we get access to this thing that's relative to our current mission. It's like, all right, Gwendolyn, come here.
Wow! Wow!
For the sake of saving the world, all right. But don't tell Moira. I just couldn't live it down. Oh my gosh.
Yes, yes. I love it. I love it. And I feel like Gwen will too.
would she?
What is the craziest thing Orin would do for a spoon? Oh my goodness. I mean, as I say, I feel like Orin would go a long way for a spoon. Mm. Orin would go a very long way and would...
Given up Aggie.
Would he give up Aggie for a spoon?
Yeah. If it was a situation where Aggie could retrieve an item or something, was the only one capable of doing it, but she'd perish in the process. Like,
can I rebuild her?
You could rebuild her, but it won't be the same Aggie, would it?
I mean, she's already Aggie 3.
I mean, she's...
Don't tell her. If I can rebuild her, it's fine.
Don't tell her.
If it's a permanent loss, I'm sorry, that's a step too far.
Yeah, yeah. But if she's a replicant, like, just keep that under wraps.
We have the technology to rebuild her.
Oh,
love it. But yes, he would go a long way for a spoon. Obviously, yeah, not betraying his friends or doing anything like that, but but he would certainly put the main campaign on hold to pursue more spoons. End of the world and or end of Gervain aside.
Yeah.
Amazing. Was your question that you wanted to ask me, was that the follow-up from earlier, or did you have a question?
It was the follow-up from earlier.
Amazing, cool.
Yeah, it was the follow-up from earlier.
Right, so sadly, that is all we have time for today.
Aww.
So huge thank you to everyone who sent in questions. Sorry if we didn't get time to ask yours today, but you can email your future questions to knowsmoreroles@hotmail.com, or you can slip into our DMs on social media, or join the conversation on our friendly Discord.
Get in there. You can also show your support for No Small Roles by leaving us a review on iTunes and Podchaser. You can rate us 5 stars on Spotify, and you can support us on Patreon, where we have a range of membership levels.
We do indeed. We've got a number of paid Patreon levels, but also Patreon have actually recently introduced a new free level that people can join. So you can actually show your support for No Small Roles without having to back anything financially at all. We're not quite sure what we're going to do with this yet, but in the new year, perhaps there's a chance that we might start being able to put a little bit out on the free Patreon level, maybe some
Sick.
Updates or stuff. So even if you don't have the means or want to like back us financially at the moment, do give that a little consider if you want to jump over to our Patreon. We also in the past have released a few bits free on the Patreon. I think we put a few bits out at Christmas in a previous year as well. So have a little check of those. Daryl, have you got anything you would like to plug for our listeners?
Yeah, just if you're in Denver or Boston, by the time this records, this comes out, the show might be done.
Certainly, I think it will come out before Boston.
Okay, cool. If you're on the east side of America, maybe near around Boston about Christmas time, come check out Yippee-ki-yay, Die Hard parody at the Hunterton Theatre. Come check me out there. Say hello. Tell me that you've listened in. It'll make it will make my day. I know that someone from the complete opposite other side of the world has listened to my podcast and seen my show and seen me live. That's nice. Also, I did a Movember D&D live stream with Rodoc.
Yes.
The video on demand is available on Twitch. I will post a link. I'll post the link to the video in the Discord, and also No Small Roles will share it.
Yes, we'll make sure that's in the show notes as well.
And anything you want to plug, Ben?
I am going to. I think Christmas Carol might have finished by the time this comes out, so I won't mention Christmas Carol. Actually, what I'm going to plug is I've been part of the reason. When I was away, one of the things that I was doing and a slightly agent of time away from No Small Roles as well was recording regarding Dracula, the podcast series, which I play Jonathan Harker. That is now all out. So actually, I'm going to recommend that people go and give that a little listen. It's got a fantastic cast in it. Really, really good cast. The sound design is incredible in it. So it's fully voiced, fully sound designed. There's some original music in it as well. And the whole thing is out now on any podcast player of your choice. So wherever you get your No Small Roles, you'll be able to get Regarding Dracula. If you look for Re, like you're replying to a letter, R-E colon Dracula, it should pop up. And of course, we'll put a link in the show notes as well.
Amazing. Well, Ben, I think it's time to brew Twain Tide.
Absolutely.
So we're going to sign off with our signature goodbye.
And none for now.
No countdown is best.
I was trying to do a countdown with my fingers.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.